material mode of passion connection.
In the particular mode of action.
And later transformed into love.
And later transformed into love.
And which is the all-devouring.
And which is the all-devouring.
Sinful enemy.
Sinful enemy.
Of this world.
Of this world.
Therefore, by Srila Prabhupada, when a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or, in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust, as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. Then again, when lust is unsatisfied, it turns into wrath. Wrath is transformed into illusion, and illusion continues the material existence. Therefore, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, and it is lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the material world. Wrath is the manifestation of the mode of ignorance, and these modes exhibit themselves as wrath and other corollaries. If, therefore, the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, is elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expanded himself into many through his ever-increasing spiritual bliss, and the living entities of that are parts and parcels of his spiritual bliss. They also have partial independence, but by misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. This material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned souls to fulfill these lustful propensities. And when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, the living entities begin to inquire about their real position. This inquiry is the beginning of the Vedanta Sutras, wherein it is said, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, one should inquire into the Supreme. And the Supreme is defined in Srimad Bhagavatam as Jatmanyasya Gatoro Mayat Itratas Cha. Or, the origin of everything is the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the origin of lust is also in the Supreme. If, therefore, lust is transformed into love for the Supreme, or transformed into Krishna consciousness, or, in other words, desiring everything from Krishna, then both lust and wrath can be spiritualized. Hanuman, the great servitor of Lord Ram, exhibited his wrath by burning the golden city of Ravana. But by doing so, he became the greatest devotee of the Lord. Here also in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord induces Arjuna to engage his wrath upon his enemies for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, lust and wrath, when they are employed in Krishna consciousness, become our friends instead of our enemies. Sri Bhagavan Unacha Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudvada Mahashano Mahapadma Vidyenam Iha Vaidina. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world. The Tudom, ahogy is ködelünk, és köpésztelünk, hogy ödej és megvált időlet, a szvámi tudelni. Namaste, szervez a videjét, óra megköcselni, nélküliség, és mindenáli feszkütjelni és tenni. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudhi Gauravatarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. How nice to be here with you all in sunny Kuala Lumpur at the lotus feet of Sri Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra Devi. We are actually, in a little while, going to be having an initiation ceremony. So we'll talk about the verse, but we'll also perhaps towards the end mention some points more directly connected with the initiation. So this is an extremely important verse in Bhagavad Gita. It is a very definitive verse. It is establishing very clearly, without pulling any punches, if you know what I mean by that, sort of slang term, but without being diplomatically polite and, you know, as if trying to go out of one's way to say something which is unpleasant or at least very strong. Krishna is saying this very strong thing very clearly, in very plain words. What is the situation in this material world for every living entity? How is it that every living entity in this world is entangled in this world? How has that entanglement come about? How is it continuing today? Today, on this very day, Sunday, the 17th of March, 2013, and how it may continue into the future. Krishna is saying it very clearly. It is lust only. It is lust only which has entangled everyone. In the previous verse, Arjuna raised the question that how is it that one is impelled to sinful acts even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Or you could say, to just sort of paraphrase the message, by what is everyone impelled to sinful acts? Even sometimes unwillingly, as if engaged by force. What is it which causes this? And so, as we said, Krishna answers in a very straightforward way. It is lust. It is lust only. Or no contact with the material mode of passion, which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world. So this is the situation. Every living entity is powerfully driven by lust. Extremely powerful. One time, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, or not asked him, he told Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, this Krishna consciousness is so wonderful. I don't feel any attraction anymore to women." And of course, he thought, the devotee thought it speaking like this, that Prabhupada was going to appreciate that and say, yes, Jai Krishna consciousness, how nice. The Prabhupada looked at him and said, oh, there is something wrong with you. You know, of course, we don't want to appear to be being sarcastic or mocking people who are attracted to members of the same sex because they're our devotees who somehow in that condition. So, but anyway, you understand in the sort of colloquial way. People sometimes joke like that, and Prabhupada was doing like that. Oh, you're not attracted to women. There's something wrong with you. In other words, it is to be expected. It is to be expected. Even people who may appear or who may be relatively something, and perhaps brought up in, even like say a devotee family, they may be brought up from childhood with no meat, fish, eggs, etc. and no intoxication, not even tea and coffee from the beginning of this life. And in terms of relations with the opposite sex, then they may be trained in the Vaishnava way to not associate loosely and just joke around and play around with members of the opposite sex, but rather be sober and responsible and like that. And even, of course, it may be in some rare cases, they may be brought up even without watching television. We know that's more rare. But so there are families of devotees. They actually do not have a television. Some may think that's rather fantastic. Even amongst devotees, some may think this is rather fantastic. But there are. There actually are families, they have no television because they know television is hugely destructive to Krishna consciousness, particularly like regular daily viewing of television. You know, it undermines Krishna consciousness. Deeply. So this is the situation in material existence. Even someone who's brought up in that way, in a Vaishnava way, in a Vaishnava family, but it is not really possible that they will not have any attraction to the opposite sex or some sexually based attraction. So here Lord Krishna is saying that Arjuna in his initial question is acknowledging that this is extremely powerful. There's something here within me and within everyone. It's extremely powerful. And it is powerful in the negative sense, in that it is just regularly trying to drag me down. And not just me, but everyone. Regularly. This influence, this downward pulling. Arjuna is acknowledging, what is it? What is it that has this very detrimental effect? And Krishna answers in this straightforward way. not mincing his words. He says, listen, Arjuna, it is lust. Accept it. It is lust. And it's a killer of Krishna consciousness. It just destroys Krishna consciousness. And therefore Krishna says, vidhyenam iha vayunam. It is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world. All-devouring, sinful enemy. You know, that's a big enemy. You couldn't really put it more strongly. Vayunam, the last word in the verse Srila Prabhupada translates in the word for word as greatest enemy. Yes. So, interesting point. And Srila Prabhupada addresses this point at the beginning of the purport. Is, interesting point, why? Why is lust so strong? Just so incredibly strong. What is the reason? Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Sudhajanevi Sri Sri Gaurantai Sri Giri Gaurantai Kinta. Why is it so strong? Well, it is because it is our eternal love for Krishna which is the strongest thing. There's nothing stronger than love for Krishna. It is that same omnipotent, all-powerful love which has become perverted, contaminated by the influence of material nature. That love for Krishna, it is the strongest thing. And we see that the devotees who are the most free from the influence of lust are those who have the greatest love for Krishna. And indeed, the process for getting free from lust is to develop love for Krishna. It is not that in order to become free from lust, we must become very strong. And lust is coming, but we are fighting it off with our strong mind, our determination. Not exactly that. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we need to be determined. But it is not just a matter of being determined. I will not let it affect me. It is also not a matter of somehow just restricting oneself or not doing certain things or not associating with certain people, like detachment, isolating oneself. Although that is also there to some degree. Like, for example, living in the temple here, we have some brahmacharis. So, for the brahmacharis, they do not associate with the ladies, unless, of course, there's some particular situation and service which requires it. But even in general, those service situations which may require some mixing and discussion like that between men and women, Generally in Krishna consciousness, we try to arrange that so the grihastha men will do those dealings, so the brahmacharis don't have to do it, preferably at all, or at least as little as reasonably possible. So that is there. But still, it's not just a matter of isolating oneself geographically. Prabhupada once, there are some letters, very famous letter of Srila Prabhupada to one devotee in New York, who suggested, he wrote to Srila Prabhupada and suggested, the ladies should not chant japa in the temple room with the men, because, you know, men and women and mixing, it's not good. So the ladies should chant somewhere else. And Prabhupada wrote back to him, why don't you just go to the forest and chant there and live there? If you want to be without women, why don't you do that? And Prabhupada said, because you are living in New York, and how are you going to just cut yourself off like that? So, in other words, it's too extreme. It's too extreme. But still, the general rule and practice is, as we mentioned, when there need to be dealings between men and women in Krishna consciousness, in the service of the Lord, then generally it's better that the grihastha men do it. Of course, that's obvious, really. So, but it is not just a matter of that. Prabhupada told one story. There were two Brahmins, and they were walking along somewhere. They came to a river. They had to cross the river. There was no bridge. Somehow they just had to go through the river. And there was one young lady there, and she also needed to cross the river, but she was not physically so strong, and she didn't think she could do it. So she asked those two Brahmins, can one of you please carry me? So one of the Brahmins, he was one of these strict brahmacharis, in a sort of exaggerated sense, you know, like even more on the fanatical side. So he thought, carry you, carry a woman? You must be joking. But the other Brahmin said, sure, I'll carry you, which shocked the first one. And anyway, the second one carried her across and put her down, and then the two of them walked on. And the first one, the very strict one, in his mind, as they walked away and for the next half hour, he was thinking, what was that? That was ridiculous. How could he do that? That's terrible. And eventually, he couldn't stop himself. He spoke. He expressed his feelings to the one who carried the lady across. He said to him, how could you do that? What sort of Brahmin are you? Carrying a woman, that's terrible. And the one who carried the lady said, well, I just carried her for 2 minutes across the river. You've been carrying her for the last hour in your mind. So it is not just a matter of some material adjustment, some just becoming very strong and fighting off material desires This is not the essence of it. Although we have to, if material desire is trying to attack us, we have to have some determination to not be overcome by it and like that. But in and of themselves, those things are not the answer. The answer is we have to develop love for Krishna. And then we'll become completely free from any type of lust, any type of material interest or attraction. Totally. Totally. And the example is the gopis. Even though they apparently had lusty attraction towards Krishna, as if he was just some attractive young man, but actually, that was not the idea at all. At all. They simply wanted to please Krishna. They had real love for Krishna, meaning that real feeling that they wanted to please Krishna and serve Him and nothing else. And therefore Lord Chaitanya, who is the strictest sannyasi, very strict, very strict, he said that the best method of worship of Krishna is that of the gopis. We should follow the gopis in terms of developing our relationship with Krishna. So this is a very important verse, and this whole subject is a very important part of Krishna consciousness. And because lust is so powerful, love of Krishna is so powerful and just all devouring, and because when it comes in contact with matter, it becomes all devouring and all conquering materially, generally they go through the Grihastha Ashram. Not always, but generally. And I remember in the good old days of Krishna consciousness, many of you perhaps were not involved at that time. I'm talking about the 1970s. I don't think so many of you were around in the 1970s in Krishna consciousness. But there was an idea amongst many young male devotees, brahmacharis, that we will take sannyas. It was a big thing. It became like the thing to do. Literally. It became like a fashion that we should aspire to and try to move in the direction of taking sannyas. And a number of them did. Even like there was one at least who I knew previously. He took sannyas when he was 21. And 21, you know, when you get older, you realize 21. The person is sort of still a child in many ways. Real adulthood. Well, Prabhupada said, and it's the Vedic standard, a male is considered a man as opposed to being a boy. And a female is considered a woman as opposed to being a girl when they reach 40. And this is why Prabhupada always referred, you hear him so much, say, the American boys and girls, and you boys and girls, and boys and girls. And he didn't addressed his disciples as you men and you women. And I remember actually wondering why boys and girls, look, I'm 21 years old. I'm not a boy. But according to Rating, the Vedic standards, and it's a fact that in terms of like the maturing which comes with experience and the stabilizing effect of aging, that men and women, males and females, are boys and girls until they reach that sort of age. So generally then, the men and the women are married, they become grihasthas in Krishna consciousness. And I'm sure you're well aware, in previous generations, in India, the males and females were married, at least officially, when they were very young. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was married when he was 9. His wife was 6. And they were married officially. You know, obviously they didn't get their own place and live together for many years, but they were married as children. Because it's just so much built in to human nature and just the nature of the living beings in material life. So, yes, and then that becomes a type of protection we find there is in the Bhagavatam. Where is it? In the third canto, perhaps? Kasyapa and Diti are speaking, that Diti became jealous because her sister and co-wife, Aditi, had children. She didn't. So she became disturbed and she wanted children. And so she really pressurized Kasyapa very heavily. And Kasyapa initially was speaking to her and trying to pacify her. And he said, actually, for the husband, the wife is like a fort, a military building, a protective military building for protection from enemies who actually otherwise would just come in and slaughter you, kill you. So through having a good Krishna-conscious wife who is as serious about perfecting their lives and progressing in Krishna consciousness as the husband is protected. And the wife, of course, is also protected. So this is a very important thing. And otherwise, as Krishna is mentioning here, this lust is so powerful. And what does it do if a person becomes possessed by lust? What happens to them? Well, Krishna actually explains just a little earlier in Bhagavad Gita 2:62 and 63. Who of you know what is 2:62 in Bhagavad Gita? Who knows? Bhagavad Gita 2:62. That? Yes, 2:62. What is it? You're very humble devotees. I'm sure some of you know. If you don't, you should. jayato shayan pursa. Sangas teshu pajayate. Sangat sanjayate kama. Kama krodo pajayate. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops. So now in this verse we're looking at 337, Krishna's saying that there is lust, and then that later, well, generally people think that we have lust, we want to enjoy not just the opposite sex, but so many things. We want to enjoy eating nice food. We want to enjoy wearing nice clothes. We want to enjoy living in a nice house. And so many things, actually. This is all lust coming out in different ways. So generally people think that through lust, if I fulfill my lusty desires, generally people think I will become happy. This is the path to happiness. I have many desires, I fulfill those desires, and I become happy. Isn't it? This is the program. People think this is the program. But, sorry, Mr. Materialist, Krishna here says something different. From attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. Kamat kroto vijayate, not kamat suko. You understand Hindi, Sanskrit. Kamat kruta suko vijayate. From lust, happiness comes. Sorry again, Mr. Materialist. You think it works like that. It doesn't work like that. If it did, there'd be a lot more happy people in this world. And, you know, there'd be a lot of happy animals in this world. Oh yeah. Happiness would be everywhere. But where is it? Where is it? You don't find much at all. So, the situation is that, as we mentioned, that lust, it is a transformation and like a deteriorated manifestation of our love for Krishna. Which, that love for Krishna, when we become absorbed in that, and we express that through service, that produces happiness. But the perverted form in this material world, lust, when we then pursue our lusty desires and fulfill them and try to enjoy, eat, drink, and be merry, as they say, we find it does not work very well. But rather, because we are spirit souls, and material enjoyment is not natural to us. Actually, it is foreign to us. It has nothing to do with us and our needs. But now we're dealing with it and trying to achieve it. So, because there is an incompatible situation, then when we try to fulfill our desires to enjoy via material lusty activity, happiness does not come. But as Krishna says, and come at crowdflowing vaginity. Anger comes. Frustration. I tried to enjoy. I tried and tried and tried, but I failed. You know, in my youth, there was a famous musical group called the Rolling Stones. They're still going on to this day. And they produced a top of the pop song, number one, called I Can't Get No Satisfaction. And even it's ironic, it's coming from them, because they're practically the emblems of lustiness and degradation in material life. But good realization. And they sing, I tried, and I tried, and I tried, but I just couldn't get satisfaction. Sexually affected. And what happens when you really try, and you really fail, after really trying and just giving it your everything, you become disturbed. You become angry. That I tried and I failed. What's going on? This is material love. This is material existence. And therefore anger arises. And the way Srila Prabhupada puts it in this verse, he uses the English word wrath. Wrath. You know, if a person is not using English every day like their mother tongue, they may not even be familiar with this word wrath. Wrath means very heavy anger. Just like you just lost control because of your anger, and you're just going to smash everything and kill everyone. That's wrath. Just like a devastating form of anger. So therefore Grihastha Ashram is there. But then, if... Now, this may be a wake-up call to some Grihasthas. I don't know. If, when two devotees become Grihasthas, husband and wife, if they then think that now, oh, it is legal. We can enjoy each other. What fun. And they just engage in sex life and just trying to improve their material situation in so many ways and get a bigger television and TV in every room and better motor car, etc., etc., then they will have the same experience, even though they're devotees. They'll find they become frustrated and angry with each other and in general. Yes. So really, ultimately, Grihastha, through the experience of the Grihastha Ashram, when they come through at the end, having had their children, brought the children up, which is, you know, that's a challenge. That's a real challenge. Bring up 1, 2, 3, 4 children, you want a challenge. That's a challenge. Having gone through that challenge, those challenges, dealing with each other 24 hours a day for like 30 years with the same person, having come through that, then they should have realized, okay, that's enough. That's enough. We can put that phase behind us and now just focus on Krishna. So, of course, it is possible for devotees not to marry and be happy as brahmacharis and brahmacharinis also. It is possible if they really absorb themselves fully and properly, nicely, in devotional service. It is possible, and actually it's very nice, if one is able to absorb oneself completely in Krishna consciousness every day, and in this way, in one's humble way, sort of transcend to some degree these basic drives of material life. It's possible, and it's very nice for some. For some. Yeah. So therefore, we have in Krishna consciousness brahmacharis, lifelong brahmacharis in some cases, and brahmacharinis also. And then later people can take sannyas. Men at least can take sannyas on the basis of developing their relationship with Krishna. On the basis of really seriously practicing, particularly seriously chanting the holy names. And in that way getting the shelter of Krishna. Because the shelter of Krishna, it's available. Even in Kali Yuga, it's available. Even though otherwise Kali Yuga is practically impossible. But it is possible to get the shelter of Krishna through chanting the holy names. So like we said, today we're having an initiation ceremony. And the main part of first initiation is that the devotees receive the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And when Lord Chaitanya was initiated by Ishvara Puri in Gaya, Lord Chaitanya asked Ishvara Puri, just immediately after the ceremony, after the initiation, Lord Chaitanya asked Ishvara Puri, so, now I'm initiated, what's my duty? And Lord Chaitanya suggested, isn't my duty now? Now I'm initiated. Should I discuss Vedanta philosophy? Dry Vedanta philosophy. And speculate about it and that sort of idea. And Ishvara Puri, he told Lord Chaitanya, no, don't do that. And then he told Lord Chaitanya what he should do. He spoke a very famous verse, Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasjeva 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 Gatir Amyata. One must chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names of Hari, Krishna. In this Kali Yuga, there's no other way, no other way, no other way to achieve the goal, gati, the goal of pure Krishna consciousness. So Lord Chaitanya, when Ishvara Puri gave him that instruction, Lord Chaitanya, as the ideal disciple, he accepted that instruction wholeheartedly, and he began chanting 24 hours a day. And because Lord Chaitanya, when he chanted, his chanting was completely free from offenses. So Lord Chaitanya, practically immediately that he started chanting, he just became overwhelmed with ecstasy. And he became completely uncontrollable. He couldn't even chant. He was crying, his voice was stammering, he was fainting, and things like this. the Ashtasattvika nadas, the eight main emotional ecstasies, all of them simultaneously completely overwhelmed him. And he was trying to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but it was just like, ha 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 ha, something like that. Just couldn't pronounce the mantra. So acting as a disciple, he came back to his spiritual master, Ishvara Puri, and acting as a disciple, he said, you know, I think I'm doing something wrong. You've got to help me. I'm trying to chant, but I can't chant. I start chanting, and then all of a sudden all these things happen and I can't chant. So I think I'm doing something wrong. Please help me. And Ishvara Puri, of course, he was a very intelligent and perceptive devotee. Ishvara Puri just laughed. Understanding the situation. He just laughed. And he said, congratulations, my dear child. You have perfected your life. So, Lord Chaitanya chanted without offenses. As a result, immediately on the spot, all those symptoms came completely and simultaneously. So we have today three devotees actually who are getting first initiation, and we say this to them also, really try to chant without offenses. You know, we could say just chant without offenses, but please note, we have said, please try your best to chant without offenses. There's at least one class of Srila Prabhupada's in which he says like that, chant without offenses. And then he says, try to chant without offenses. Because in Kali Yuga, it's very difficult. In fact, it's incredibly difficult to maintain a very, very high level of Krishna consciousness. There's a class of Srila Prabhupada's. You can listen to it, it's available. You can read about it on the computer. It's available. Srila Prabhupada is stressing how we have to follow the regulative principles completely, and how we have to avoid offenses completely. No offenses! And the devotees are sitting there looking at Srila Prabhupada like, wow, really? No offenses? Sure. That's a challenge. And Prabhupada, concluding the class, Prabhupada said, alright, at least 90% free. And the devotees still looked a little discouraged. 90%. Prabhupada said, well, at least 80%. They still looked a bit discouraged. And Prabhupada said, at least 75%. And then Prabhupada said, all right, what you do, just hold on to my dhoti, and I will take you back to Godhead. Prabhupada said, I have a key for the back door. I will get you in. So we should really try, and I mean really try, to avoid offenses in our chanting and not accept if we find we're becoming offensive or our mind is drifting and starting to contemplate other things. We should stop. At least we should really try to stop and not accept it that, oh, it's okay for a while. I'll daydream about one of the ladies who looks nice to me. We shouldn't accept it that it's okay. We should fight it, actually. But the bottom line, so to speak, is we should really try our best. as much as they're able to avoid offences. Means particularly the 10 offences. Not to blaspheme the devotees. Not to think that the names of the demigods are equal to or independent of Krishna's names, or to think that the demigods in general are equal to or independent of Krishna or greater than Krishna. That along with chant, I will chant Hare Krishna, plus I will carry kavadi for Murugan. As extra insurance. If Krishna doesn't help me enough, Murugan will be there. Or Lord Shiva, or Durga, or Ganesh, Madhravira. They worship Madhravira here? Yeah. And all these Tamil demigods. So, no. We should stick with Krishna. Stick with Krishna. Not that we have our Krishna conscious altar in the front, so when the devotees come, they think, oh, look how Krishna conscious you are. You've got such a nice altar. But at the back, in a cupboard, there's the demigod altar. No, that's the second offense. And then to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, think you know better than the spiritual master, or disobey, to blaspheme the Vedic literatures, disobey the instructions of the Vedic literatures, think we know better than Krishna, and to think the glories of the holy names are imaginary, or to give some interpretation on the holy names, or to try to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy names. I will do all my nonsense, and I will watch Bollywood. What? Dulwale Dulyana Lejayenge. Do you watch Hindi movies? Or just Tamil ones? Anyway, that's a Hindi movie. The most popular of all Bollywood movies. Dulwale Dulyana Lejayenge. Rajnikant. Well, the latest one I saw when I was in Bombay a few weeks ago, Kai Po Che. You know that one? Maybe it hasn't arrived here yet. It's the latest and greatest. And not to think that the chanting of Hare Krishna is just another material religious activity. We carry kavadi. We do fire walking for Draupadi. We do Durga Puja and Ganesh Chaturthi. And we do all these things. And we chant Hare Krishna as well. No. And not to instruct faithless people. Like blasphemous, nasty people. That's really what it means. Because we have to preach. We have to preach to the ordinary people, and they don't have faith. But we have to preach to them. So that ninth offense means not to preach to blasphemous, nasty people. Or to preach to people beyond their capacity to really assimilate the information, you know, something too high and too esoteric. And then to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names, and to maintain material intentions despite having heard so many instructions on the planet. So those are the 10 offenses. Plus, it's also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. And that inattention, it is like, you could say, the mother of the 10 offenses. It is like the mother. From that offense, the others are born. If you are fully attentive, there will be no space in your mind for thinking about the other ones. So in that sense, it is like the mother of all offenses, inattention. So we have our three devotees today. They're receiving first initiation, and we appeal to them. They must do their very best to avoid these 10 offenses, maintain their rounds, avoid breaking the regulative principles, do as much service as possible, and in general make Krishna consciousness their life and soul. Now, I'm just looking around, I don't see them. Maybe I frightened them off. Maybe they get ready. What we should do now is take their vows. Let them take their vows. Give them their names and chanting beads, and then we'll go outside for the fire sacrifice. So yes, the essence of first initiation is receiving the Mahamantra via the sanctified chanting beads, and then really trying to chant without offenses. I was present in Srila Prabhupada's room once, I think it was 1974, and when Prabhupada was having darshan, there was only maybe 10 or 15 devotees there, and one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, he read a little, like a sentence or two, from Nectar of Devotion, the chapter which is describing the offenses. It's the 7th or 8th or 9th chapter, I forget exactly. But there are many, many offenses. And at the end of those offenses, Prabhupada lists out these 10 offenses. And Srila Prabhupada makes the point that if you break the other offenses, not the 10 offenses, the other ones, if you break them, then you can overcome the effects. Well, the effects will be overcome just by your continuing in Krishna consciousness. You don't need to make some special effort. You just carry on, basically. But then Srila Prabhupada says, you can read it if you have a look there. Towards the end of that chapter in Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada says that if you commit any of the 10 offenses, that you cannot overcome the reaction. That's serious, isn't it? Cannot. So the devotee then asked Srila Prabhupada, he read this little passage out in which Prabhupada makes this point, you cannot overcome the reactions to the 10 offenses. And the devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, isn't there some way that we can overcome the reactions to the 10 offenses? And Srila Prabhupada looked at him. He really looked at him. Like a really penetrating stare or gaze. And we're wondering, wow, what's going to happen? And Prabhupada said, you have asked this question because you want to offend. You want to offend and then just do something to escape the reaction. Something easygoing like that. And told him, you must stop offending. No more offenses. Right. Okay. So we have here three devotees. First initiation. This is Dr. Selva. Do you know him? Is he a known person? He's not hiding in the suburbs. We hope he's a known devotee, an active devotee. And this is his good wife, Dr. Jayati. So, first of all, we welcome. That's good. Yeah. Okay. Well, you can use this microphone. Pass it between us. So, first of all, Selva, then Jayanti. Please tell us, what are the four regulative principles you're vowing today to follow? The rest of the life, into the microphone, and then you respond.
It means that Radharani is the queen
of the light is, of the light of Krishna. From today on, you will be known as Praneshwari Devi Dasi. Praneshwari Devi Dasi. Okay. And do all. Oh, okay. So some announcements, and then we'll go outside for the process.